Hi, this is Derek from Atlanta. Unlike Bob, I am a former law enforcement officer, but I still enjoy listening to a practical show by a practical guy. You're listening to the Handgun World Podcast.
I'm Bob Main, and this is the Handgun World Podcast. I carry a gun because I can't carry a cop. Welcome to episode number 369. This week I've got an interview for you. I invited Paul Carlson from the Safety Solutions Academy podcast and also the Gun Nation podcast to join me. You know, last week in episode 368, I talked about, does your gun fit your hand? And I defined what handgun fit is and so forth. I thought it would be a good idea this week to get into that subject again because Paul has additional information about how your gun fits your hand. And we discussed that. We talk about the difference between fit and feel. A lot of people don't realize that there is a difference between handgun fit and handgun feel. And then, of course, you hear a lot of people talking about the pointability. Does it point naturally or does it not point naturally? We also, Paul and I, talk about, does this really affect your shooting a lot or does it affect your ability to use that handgun? Is it a crutch? Is it a legitimate thing to look at and to consider, or is it somewhere in between? We talked about concealed carrying, about why he appendix carries and why I most of the time appendix carry firearms and different holsters and things to look at and the different types of guns to consider depending on how you're going to carry them. So I thought this was a pretty good concealed carry discussion and interview, and I think you're going to like it. As I get ready here to put the interview on for you, I want to mention something about an upcoming training class. On September 17th, we're going to be teaching Beyond Concealed Carry Advanced. Well, Ben cannot make it. So just like Ben is filling in this month for me up in Alaska, I'm going to fill in for him here in San Antonio. He has a scheduling conflict. He's going up to do another class somewhere else on that day. So it's a one day Beyond Concealed Carry Advanced, yours truly. I will be your instructor. And I know the advanced curriculum that Ben and I have put together pretty well. And I train with it regularly. I train that into my conscious and subconscious regularly. So I'm going to share that with you. One day, 9 to 5, it's going to be about a 300-plus round course. It's basically level 2 of our Beyond Concealed Carry. And guess what? We gave it a new name, Worst Case Scenarios. So it's still called Beyond Concealed Carry Advanced, but I will be discussing and showing some worst case scenarios. Worst case scenarios. Excuse me. That's how I meant to say that. I think you're going to enjoy that a lot. There is an early bird special from now to July 30th, so take advantage of the early bird special if you can. Go to handgunworld.com, click training classes, and you'll see how to sign up for that. It's at Lone Star Handgun in the San Antonio area. All right, let's get to the interview with Paul Carlson from the Safety Solutions Academy podcast. Back on the show for a second time is Paul Carlson from Safety Solutions Academy podcast and also a contributor at the Gun Nation. Paul, welcome back.
Hey, thanks, Bob. How are you doing today?
I'm all right. You know, I recently got some good news, still cancer-free. So,
awesome.
Yeah, praise God for that.
I'm so pleased to hear that, Bob. Good for you.
Yeah, thank you. You know, I tell everybody that I can. I live on gifted time.
Well, don't we all?
We all do, but you know, unless you've been through something like I've been through, it's hard for a lot of people to remember that.
I think that's really the key right there is, you know, it's the rain. I talk about this with my kids, sometimes even with my students. It's the rain that makes the sunshine so sweet, right? It's that that bad day that makes the good day so amazing.
And exactly. So I'm pressing on.
Good for you, Bob.
Yeah, thank you. Well, Paul, I wanted to bring you back on. First of all, reintroduce yourself to people because one thing I've learned, I've been doing this now over 6 years, is not everybody listens to everybody else. So right. Tell people who you are.
Yeah, my name is Paul Carlson. I'm the owner of Safety Solutions Academy. Primarily, SSA is here to bring really high-quality firearms training to folks that are interested in actually leading safer lives. As a part of that, we teach courses all the way from concealed carry, heck, even before that, just gun safety courses, all the way up through advanced handgun courses, courses with carbines, shotguns. I also have the Safety Solutions Academy podcast where I don't even know. I stopped numbering my episodes. I'm guessing I'm over 400 episodes now with the SSA podcast. Where
yeah.
We're doing some deep dive interviews with folks that are making things happen in the industry and taking a look at self-defense from a little bit of a different perspective than folks might hear. And we do all the other obligatory blog and YouTube and all those kinds of things that folks do today. So maybe more importantly, I'm a dad and I'm a husband and just loving life.
Yeah, same here. And I have listened to probably 12 or 13 out of your most recent 15 or 20 episodes.
Wow.
And they're real good. Good job on the interviews.
Thanks, Bob. I appreciate that. It's sometimes a challenge to try and take things in the direction that we want them to go and get something different and unique. But I'm enjoying learning how to be a better interviewer, that's for sure.
Well, and there's an interview you recently did I want to bring up. But before I get into that, I also want to give a shout-out to Doc and Average Joe over at Gun Nation, and you're on the Gun Nation podcast as well.
Absolutely. Those guys, you know, Doc has been an institution in the firearms podcast, really being one of the first and longest running podcasts that's out there. And he invited me on, gosh, about 2 years ago now for the first time, and it's just become kind of a regular thing. So I'm really happy to be on with Doc and Joe and Ian from time to time, Richard Johnson and Melody Lauer. It's a good crew over there. Lots of good stuff
That's
happens.
That's right. Yeah, we don't want to forget about those others as well. Well, you are an instructor, in fact, a lot longer than I have. And you know, listeners need to know, Paul and I met for the first time last year when Ben Branham and I went up to Ohio and taught our Beyond Concealed Carry class. And so what I wanted to find out from you is, you know, last week I talked about, you know, does your gun fit your hand? Mm-hmm. And some people may not agree with everything. Maybe you don't agree with everything. Maybe you do. I kind of, my take on it was that it's important. Handgun fit is important. I try to do my best definition of what handgun fit is, but I also took the position that handgun fit is not really a deal breaker.
Yeah, I think that today it can more and more move towards that deal breaker range, but that's only because we've got more choices to choose from. It's not the most important attribute of a defensive handgun, but I do think it has its place. And so you and I have a lot of parallel views on fit. I take my definition a little bit farther for when it comes to, you know, what the fit of a handgun is. But I really do like the way you approached things last week, Bob, from the standpoint that you talked about the idea that, you know, you can win if you've got a gun that doesn't fit. You can still defend yourself. You can defend others that you love, other innocent people. Just because a gun doesn't fit doesn't mean you can't do that.
It doesn't mean you can't shoot it and you can't shoot it well.
Absolutely. You know, we can look at all kinds of situations throughout history where, whether it's law enforcement or civilian defense, you know, small statured people find themselves in a situation where they've got a handgun that's what we would call much too large for their hand, and yet they still prevail in a situation because they've either taken the time to learn how to get around the fit challenges, or they have enough determination that it's really the willpower that's helping them to prevail as opposed to a tool. And we always have to remember, the gun is just a tool.
Yeah, the gun's just a tool. And I think handgun fit's very important. Mm-hmm. As a matter of fact, I did say in my last episode that it is very important. So why don't you take a minute to give us what your definition of handgun fit?
Sure.
What is it? What does it mean when you say, when you ask if the gun fits your hand or does it fit your hand?
Yeah.
What does that mean?
I'm glad you asked that. I look at it really threefold, Bob. And you kind of dove into the first aspect and you talked about it really well. We're going to put these in order of priority. And the first thing that we're going to assume is that if you need to use a handgun to defend yourself and you need to fire a shot, obviously that begins with the first shot. And so what we need to make sure of when it comes to handgun fit as our first priority is that we're able to hold on to the grip of the gun and manipulate the trigger. Basically, what that means is, can we have some part of our hand around the backstrap of the gun? Can we reach the trigger? Hopefully it's someplace between the tip of our finger and that first knuckle where we make contact. And right. Can we defeat any safety devices that are on that trigger if we're talking about a modern striker-fired gun? So maybe we're dealing with the paddle safety that's out there on some of the triggers like the Glock or possibly a hinge trigger on the Smith & Wesson M&P series pistols. Can we defeat those safety devices? And if we can press that trigger to the rear, then we're at the beginning of gun fit. And there are all kinds of people, again, throughout history that have had guns that, man, it's really a stretch to get out there to that trigger to be able to activate that trigger, but they can do it and they can defend themselves. So that's the first priority. Can you fire the first shot? Now, we know that handguns are unfortunately ballistically very poor for doing what it is that we want them to do. They're not the greatest tool for stopping threats. And so we can assume that in most situations, we're probably going to have to fire more than one round. And that's where handgun fit steps into our second priority, and that's management of recoil. Can we manage the recoil of the handgun so that we can quickly fire additional rounds should we need to? So when we have our finger in the proper position on the trigger, again, you know, we've defeated the safety, we're in that spot where we can press the trigger to the rear. The next question is, well, where does that gun line up in your hand? And the optimal situation for recoil management for us would be if we were to, you'll have to excuse me here, I'm a math teacher, right? I used to teach in middle school math and science. If we were to draw a ray, so a part of a line that starts at the front sight and continues through the rear sight and on forever up our arm, we would want that line to go right through the center of the web of our hand in between the thumb and the index finger. And if we can put the gun in that position, while our finger is still in the appropriate place on the trigger with the safety defeated in a position where we can push it smoothly to the rear, now we've got a spot where we're going to take the energy from that gun. It's going to move quickly from our hand into our forearm, into our upper arm, and hopefully into our shoulders and upper body so we can use our whole body to manage the recoil. And that way, if we can manage recoil, whether we're shooting one-handed or two-handed, we're going to be able to fire a rapid succession of shots in a reasonably sized group so that we can stop that threat. And, you know, maybe we're looking at a threat that's 5 yards away. We're talking about nipple to nipple, sternum to clavicle. So we're talking about a 7 by 9 inch, you know, kind of semicircle is really what it ends up looking like. But you can use a square or whatever. 8.5 by 11 sheet of paper is a great way to look at it. If you can put rapidly those rounds in that paper, hey, we're talking good handgun fit. Now, that moves us to the third priority. If we've fired that first shot, and we fired a rapid succession of other shots, we want that gun to fit so that we can deal with other challenges that might face us, meaning we may run the gun dry and need to reload that gun. That means we want our thumb to be able to reach the magazine release, hopefully without being able or without having to, shift our hand on that grip. So our finger would stay above the trigger while we're doing our reloading, but in the same position where it could drop right back down when we're ready to shoot again. Our hand would stay in the same position to be able to manage recoil, and if we can reach that magazine release, wow, that would be outstanding. In addition to that, we might have to deal with malfunctions. Can we lock that slide to the rear using our strong thumb if we're right-handed, or using whatever method it is if you're a lefty and don't have an ambidextrous slide stop lever? Can we do that without shifting our grip on the gun? And if we can do all of those things, now we've got a gun that we can truly say fits our hand. Now, that last step, you know, the magazine release, I carry a Glock. I have to shift my grip to hit that mag release, even if I have a slightly extended mag release button. I have to do it. The gun doesn't fit me perfectly. And like you've said over and over again, Bob, does that mean I can't shoot the gun? No. What it means is I'm a little bit less efficient than I'd like to be. And so then I have to start making evaluations on why is it that I'm choosing this particular gun? And it all comes down to efficiency. My goal is to stop a threat, and I need to make sure I'm able to do that with as little time, effort, and energy as possible. Fit is one part of that. But there are all kinds of other things that go along with that efficiency model that we have to consider.
Yeah, two things I want to ask you. See, I carry a Glock is my primary
carry as well. I have to shift it in my hand on a third generation Glock in order to press the mag button. Mm-hmm. But what about for you in the fourth gen Glocks? Can you reach the fourth gen mag release?
About 90% of the time I can hit that Gen 4 mag release because it does come a little bit farther to the rear. It's a little bit more, you know, just because of the way my thumbs are shaped, I'm not pushing across the gun as much as I'd like to. However, yeah. I'm pretty much there. And so I'll say this carefully. If I were to be staying with Glocks, or if I do stay with a Glock, I'll probably make that transition to the Gen 4 for that specific reason. Now I've got my gun in a situation where it would fit me, you know, to the T of my definition, and it would be much more efficient. And as long as that gun is running reliably, which is probably what I would say is the most important attribute of a defensive handgun, is reliable operation, then why in the world wouldn't I want to carry a gun that fits a little bit better?
Okay, so yours is a Gen 3.
Gen 3, yep. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Now, here's something else I want to bring up. I think a lot of people confuse handgun fit with how well that it points for them.
Yeah, I kind of call that feel. And when you ask somebody, or somebody asks, you know, let's say you go to the gun counter and you're trying out a gun and you ask the person behind the counter, say, hey, you know, does this gun fit me? The response you're likely to get is, well, how does it feel? Well, that's not an answer to the question, because yes, fit and feel are two different things. There's no doubt about it. And the pointability of a defensive handgun really comes into the realm of feel. I spoke with the folks at Lone Wolf while I was at the NRA annual meetings, and I'm probably going to be getting my hands on a Timberwolf frame before too long. And
ooh, you're going to like it.
Yeah, but what's going to change is the point of that gun, the pointability. It's the grip angle is different. And so what I'm going to have to get used to is, well, how do I need to arrange my hands in relation to my arms when they're at full extension to be able to get the hits where I want them to go, to have the sights aligned, or to have the gun in parallel with my line of sight? It's going to be slightly different by a few degrees. Not a big deal, but that changes the pointability of the gun.
Ben Branham has a Timberwolf frame for a G19, and I had a chance to dry fire it and hold it and things like that. It's nice. It's very nice, but you're right. The grip angle is different.
Yeah, and it's not a better grip angle. It's not a worse grip angle. It's the grip angle that they've chosen, and it's just a matter of getting used to that. So that's the challenge. And again, if we take the pointing of the gun back to the idea of it being centered in the web of a hand, you know, if I switch back to my Glock 21, which is a 45 caliber Glock that's a little bit wider, the gun is going to point slightly differently because my hand is going to be on it differently, and I'm going to have to take a little bit of time to assess while I'm shooting to get those hits. How much time am I talking about? You know, it may be just a matter of one or two rounds to get it, to have it feel. It's a gun that I shot a tremendous amount. I've got experience behind the gun, but everybody has to find that for themselves.
Yeah. Now, let's get back to pointability, because pointability, in my mind, pointability kind of meshes together a little bit with fit.
Sure.
Even though one's feel and one is fit, people tend to kind of put the two together, like you just mentioned a little while ago. Isn't that right?
Yeah.
Isn't that what you're saying?
Yeah, I think that they do. And I think, Bob, all of this becomes gray territory, if you will. I mean, choosing a defensive handgun is not a black and white issue.
No.
There are all kinds of things that go into it. You know, I'm a guy that has average size hands, and a Glock 43 is really too small of a gun for me. I have a hard time clamping my hands down around it and keeping the gun still. So it points erratically. I have a hard time pointing it the same way every shot because it moves in my hands. But if I'm in a situation where I need a gun that is very concealable, that might be the best defensive handgun for me. Now, that's not my life right now. You know, I carry basically a full-size gun, something in between the Glock 17 and the Glock 19. I like to call it the, quote, Glock 18, unquote. But, you know, that's what works for me right now. It doesn't mean that it's not going to be different for me in a different part of my life or different for another person.
Yeah. So you're kind of with me on the point that it doesn't mean that you can't fight and you can't win if it doesn't fit your hand perfectly.
Absolutely. You know, if I'm in, I'm trying to think, you know, back in the Detroit area in one of the suburbs where, you know, my buddy's a law enforcement officer and I decide I'm going to do a ride along and, you know, I can't legally carry while I'm, you know, with him on a ride along because I'm not a sworn law enforcement officer and his department doesn't want me to. So maybe it's not illegal. It's more of a rule thing. If something happens and he's injured, you know, he's got a big SIG 226. It doesn't mean that I'm not going to grab that gun and do the work that I need to do just because the gun doesn't fit me well. Give me a break. You know, we're going to get over there real quick and take care of the situation that needs to be taken care of. If I need to use that firearm or if I'm in a place where, I have a friend that has a firearm that loans it to me, or I'm staying at someone else's house and I've got a loaner gun because I'm traveling out of state and didn't bring a gun with me because I can't legally carry. I'm not going to be worried about fit. I'm just going to be glad I have a gun and I'm going to do what I need to do.
Paul, why would anybody in Detroit need a handgun?
Right. I can't even imagine, you know?
or even an AR-15. I mean, come on, Detroit?
Right, right.
No, that say it ain't so.
It's funny, Bob, because I'm not one of those guys that has prior military experience. I don't have prior law enforcement experience. I understand a lot of things about violence, but, you know, being in a job where I've had to deal with it is not one of those things. But when I tell people I was a teacher and they say, well, where'd you teach? And I said, in the Detroit area. This light goes on. I'm like, oh, now I understand. Well,
now I know why.
That's an exaggeration too, but I'll take the brownie points or whatever you want to call them.
All right. I got off track. So anyway, I would say I have probably medium sized hands, mm-hmm. and I got pretty long fingers. Mm-hmm. So a Glock actually, by the definition of fit, it fits well for me. Mm-hmm. Actually, and I'm one of the few people that may ever say this, but a Glock also points well for me. Other people say, you gotta be kidding. It's one of the worst pointing guns in the world. But I kind of think of it this way. If your sights are aligned and they're on target, your sights are aligned and they're on target.
Yeah. The bullet's going to go where the sights are aligned to when you press the trigger.
Exactly. Who cares how the gun points? I mean, and I've done a lot of point shooting with a Glock and with other pistols, too. I've done point shooting with M&Ps and with Walthers and everything else that supposedly have a natural point of aim. I really can't tell the difference.
Yeah, Bob, I don't remember from last week's episode. Did you talk about tennis rackets and hitting backhands? Was that your podcast or did I pick that up someplace else?
That was me. I talked about tennis rackets and I talked about hitting baseballs. And there's one I forgot to put in there. Shooting free throws.
Sure. All of those things are things that we habituate learning the kinesthetic alignment that we need to have to make those things happen. Whether it's shooting a bow that's bare without sights, whether it's hitting a baseball or hitting a ball with a tennis racket, you know, these are things that we learn how to position our body to get the desired response. We learn it by failing and being disappointed in our results and then having success and being pleased with our results. And as we learn what it is and we get the response that we want over and over again, we habituate, we grease the wheels, we dig the ruts in the road deeper, so it makes it easier and easier to repeat that action.
Yeah, exactly. I got an email. It was either an email or a Facebook message from a listener who's a bow hunter.
Mm-hmm.
And I wish I could find the email right now as we speak, but I can't. But anyway, I'll summarize his point. He says, you know, he uses bows that don't have sights. Mm-hmm. And he's good out to – he's excellent out to 40 to 45 yards with his bow with no sights.
Yeah, I'm not surprised.
But if you put a gun in someone's hand with no sights and ask them to take a 40-yard shot, they can't do it. Why can people do it with bows – and they can't do it with a gun? Why is that?
I think it really comes down, Bob, to our dependence on what we believe, our confidence in our abilities. I'm not saying that anyone should want to take a 40-yard shot with a handgun without sights. However, if we were to train that, if sights had never been invented, you better bet that people would be getting hits with handguns out to 40 yards. It would take more time. it would be more difficult to develop those habits because your results would be much more sporadic. But let's be serious. Bob, I'm guessing you and many of your listeners have gone out to a rifle range and had a target at 50 or 60 or 70 or 80, maybe even 100 yards on the rifle range, and they've decided they wanted to put some rounds on it with their handgun. Have you ever done that?
Yes. In fact, I've made the hits, too.
Right. And what's interesting to me is, at that distance, oftentimes the sights are so darn fat on a combative handgun that they cover up the majority of the target.
Exactly.
So we're really not able to use those sights to do anything other than to line the pistol up parallel with our line of sight and then position it to the best of our ability in our line of sight between our eye and the target. And guess what? I mean, that bullet's traveling in a relatively straight line. If the gun is parallel with your line of sight and it's in between your eyes and the target, guess where the bullet's going to go?
Right there. As a matter of fact, in February of this year, Ben and I taught an advanced class in Houston, and we had, at the end of the 2 days, we had the students out at about 65 yards.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, most of them actually found that the sights were a hindrance at that distance.
It's absolutely the truth. And when you guys were in Ohio, in the Canton area, and I came out to visit you on day two, I wasn't able to be there for the whole day, came out, you know, about lunchtime, maybe a little bit later, and you guys were back at that distance.
And, yeah,
and,
we were.
And guys and gals, in fact, were getting hits on targets on, what were they, probably 2/3 IPSC steel targets or something like that. So they were smaller than human size, and yet at 60, 70 yards, people were getting hits. And the reason that they're able to do that is because the simple kinesthetic alignment. Do the sights help to some degree if you have the right sights?
Of course.
Absolutely. But you don't need them.
All right, Paul, I'm going to give you a chance to build yourself up. Tell everybody what you did when you came out there.
I missed the first shot.
No, you didn't.
Yeah, I did. I got my second shot. I missed the first and then dinged the steel on shot number
I thought seven. You hit with your first shot.
I don't think so, Bob. No.
And we were like at about 75 or 80 yards. And we're all out there and we're missing and hitting and missing and hitting. And Paul Carlson rolls up and he says, well, can I try it? I thought you hit with your first shot.
Well, it was cold out of the car with too many cups of coffee, so I was pleased I made anything happen, you know?
If you miss your first, you hit on your second shot at somewhere around 75 or 80 yards. It was fun to watch.
Yeah, it was a good challenging shot, and it was a good time being out there with folks and spending time with you and Ben.
Well, so since we're still on the handgun fit topic here, you recently had a chance when you were over at the NRA show to talk to the guy from SIG, which I really, really enjoyed that interview. And you guys spent a lot of time talking about the SIG 320.
Yeah.
As a matter of fact, I was kind of hoping that maybe because of time constraints, you couldn't spend any more time. I was hoping to hear a little bit more about that. Have you had a chance to shoot it yet?
Not yet. I actually went today to the gun shop. I was there on other business, needing to get some things arranged for some upcoming courses and such. And I said, hey, you guys have a P320 in. And I got my hands on one because my next question was, what size grip is the right size for me? And so I haven't yet been to the range to fire one, but now that I know that a medium is pretty much in the sweet spot for me, I can even get that magazine release with a medium size grip. I'm getting ready to get one of those in hand and start to do the research to really be able to answer, you know, good questions about, is this the right defensive handgun? And there's going to be all kinds of things that we're going to have to look at, but it certainly is a possibility for me now that I've spent some time talking with the folks from SIG and understanding some of my misconceptions about what I believe that firearm to be. Again, I'm still not totally convinced, and I certainly did appreciate all of the time that the folks from SIG dedicated, and you're absolutely right. I would have loved to have spent another hour talking with Scott Kennison, the director of training from SIG Sauer Academy. I would have loved to have spent another hour, but to be fair to SIG, you know, I'm taking one of their top guys off the show floor on Saturday morning at NRA, which is a prime time. It's only understandable that he's going to have to get back to work. So I'm very glad they spent the hour with me that they did.
Yeah, and I want to invite people to listen to that interview because I listened to it and I thought it was very good. Go to Paul's podcast, Safety Solutions Academy. What episode number is it, Paul?
Yeah, I stopped numbering them, Bob, but if they do a search for Scott Kennison, K-E-N-N-E-S-O-N, it'll pop up. So you can just hit the search bar there. Or if you go on iTunes, it's the last episode that dropped. There might be one or two in front of it by the time this airs, but it's pretty close to the top.
Well, a couple of days after you did that interview, I was coming home from a business trip, and I stopped in over at Sparks Firearms in San Antonio where Ben Branham works. Mm-hmm. And I said, all right, let me see a SIG 320. And they had the medium SIG 320 mm-hmm. there. And so I had a chance to, you know, dry fire it 10 or 15 times and get a good feel of the grip. I guess they call it the compact size. I would describe it like you as medium.
Right.
And I like it. I like it. I liked what I felt. I liked the feel of the gun. So we were talking about fit and feel. I like the feel. The fit, it fit me well. I just can't get over that high bore axis for some reason.
Yeah, and that's, you know, that's where it's one of the two points where my conversation started. You know, when the gun came out, I won't mention who it is from SIG that I was talking with, but I was, you know, walking down the aisle at SHOT. We weren't even at the booth, and they said, well, hey, what do you think about the P320? And my response was, you know, direct, as I often am. I said, well, you know, it's a shame to see you guys bring out a gun that was designed in the boardroom as opposed to for defensive shooters. I mean, this is basically, you know, what I can see is SIG said, man, we need a striker-fired gun. How can we do that? Oh, let's just drop in striker-fired guts into the P250 and we're done. And I said that again at NRA, asking the honest question, where did this gun come from? And Scott was kind enough to educate me about the realities of that. And, you know, we go into the 12 points that were able to be brought to the guys that were defensive minded out of the 13 that they asked for by the designers. And he talks about what those points were and why they were important. Now, it doesn't mean the gun might not be able to be improved in the future by lowering that bore axis. But at the same time, you know, you've got a SIG Legion, right, Bob?
I do. I have a 229 Legion, and I'm very impressed with it. I like it a lot.
And that's a hammer-fired gun, and I bet the bore axis is darn close to the bore axis of the P320.
Probably the same.
And my question would be, if you can shoot the Legion, why wouldn't you be able to shoot the P320? Now, if it could be dropped down lower, might it be better? Maybe. But, you know, we've got to look at the whole package. And for me, what the SIG P320 or the Lone Wolf, Timberwolf frame do for me is they give me the opportunity to configure my gun the way that I want to without having to buy a brand new gun and then start chopping it up. And I just, if my Glock fit me perfectly, if it fit my carry style perfectly, I wouldn't need to chop it up, but I need a shorter grip to be able to conceal it effectively, and I want the longer barrel to help me carry in the appendix position more comfortably. And, you know, now the SIG P320, I have that option. I simply swap out the frame for $40 and put on that compact frame in the medium girth, the medium size, on a full-length 9mm barrel, and I've made my long-barreled gun with a short grip, just like I've taken my Glock 17 and chopped off the grip.
Yeah, and we're going to get to that. I want to talk about that in a few minutes, but cool. I want to answer kind of a hypothetical question you brought up a little earlier. I actually believe I can shoot my 229 Legion probably better than I could the 320, although that proves that's yet to be proven. Here's why. The 229 Legion is not your ordinary SIG 229.
Sure.
That trigger is phenomenal.
Mm-hmm.
That double action trigger and their single action short reset trigger is tremendous. And it's a steel gun, so it weighs more than the 320, which is, I believe you said it was aluminum, right?
Well, the chassis is a stainless steel chassis, and then the grip is all polymer. So
grip is polymer,
If we were to talk about, you know, the quote frame of the gun like a Glock, it's pretty much the same mass wise from that standpoint. It's got some metal parts in the frame and then a full metal slide and top end, and so it's probably the same there. And that Legion, if I understand correctly, I've not had one in my hands because
they're nice.
The whole traditional double action thing just isn't my cup of tea.
Well, I didn't think Yeah, go ahead.
It's got that steel frame, right?
Yeah, it does have a steel frame. Yeah. I never thought that traditional double action would be my cup of tea either, but I found over the years I've been able to shoot my Car Arms PM9 pistol double action only very well.
Mm-hmm. Well,
very well. So, you know, I thought to myself, well, why couldn't I shoot the SIG? So far, I like the 229 Legion.
There's been a huge resurgence in the recommendation of double single. So when I say traditional double action, just, you know, I don't want to get into too much jargon and have people confused. That traditional double action is that long, heavy trigger press up front for the first shot and then shorter single action trigger presses following up. And so when we have those kinds of guns, there's been a huge resurgence of that firearm being a good choice. The CZ pistols are very popular in competition. The Sig Sauers have always been very popular. You know, meticulous machining and excellent craftsmanship in the Sig Sauer guns. And I think what the challenge is, Bob, is have you been doing this for a little while? You've got a couple years under your belt, right? Like 20?
No, only since 2005.
Okay, well, you've got a lot of rounds down range in that 11 years compared to the average shooter, right? And so when I look at that traditional double action, for someone like you, probably not the biggest deal. You've probably shot plenty of double action guns, plenty of single action guns, plenty of modern striker fired guns. And if I were to put a gun in Bob's hand, Bob is going to do what he needs to do with that gun, and it might take him a short amount of time, maybe a magazine to adjust, maybe even less. And you're going to be able to do the work you need to do. What I worry about is when new shooters hear this and say, man, the Sig Legion is awesome and great, that shooter that still has trouble managing triggers in general, no matter what trigger it is, now we've got a much more complex gun than they need to get the job done with those two distinct trigger pulls, and that can be challenging and overwhelming.
I would definitely agree with you, Paul. I don't think something like a 229 Legion or even anything like that at all, I don't think that's a beginner's gun.
Right. The Beretta 92, another example of, you know, so many people dive straight into that gun because, hey, that's the M9. That's what the Army and the Navy and the Air Force and the Marines carry. That's a difficult gun to shoot for lots of different reasons. The trigger is just one of them. And so, you know, I for a long time said, if you really want to get good at running a single action or a striker fired pistol, spend some time shooting a double action or a double action revolver. Man, you're going to be good at running a trigger because it takes a lot of concentration to make it happen. It takes a lot of work to get the job done. It makes it easy. It's like lifting heavy weights at the gym to make lighter weights easier. You get stronger. You get stronger at trigger pressing. And so,
yeah, very good analogy.
What I worry is that people then say, well, it's just a training issue. It's just something that we have to train through and get done to make it happen. And the problem with that is, yeah, but if you spent that time training to shoot a simpler trigger, you could be working on skills that might be more important.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, one thing I will say, and by the way, this is not meant to be a commercial for SIG. And actually, what I'm about to say is a little bit of a negative. One thing about the SIG 229 Legion, it does not fit my hand. Mm. It does not fit my hand. Now, I can work it out. I can still shoot it. When I was at the range, I was shooting it real well. Here's what I've yet to do. I've yet to go take a two-day 600 to 800 round course with it and compare that to my Glock 19 and see how well I do.
Sure. Can you run the decocker with your strong thumb?
Yes, I can.
Okay, good.
No problem. In fact, one thing that SIG has done well on the Legion is, I don't know, you'd have to ask the folks at SIG. I think they put it slightly in a different place.
Okay.
I think either that or for some reason I can run that decocker far easier than I can run the decocker on a regular. Now, I might get proven wrong. Someone from SIG might say, Bob, knucklehead, it's in the same place. But for some reason, I seem to be able to operate that better than a standard SIG.
And it may just be a fit and finish issue. You know, that's a semi-custom gun that you're talking about with the Legion. And you know, so maybe the polishing has been done, the fitting has been done so that it just runs really smoothly.
Yeah, the other thing that they've done on that gun that I really like that you don't see on a conventional SIG double action, single action, is they've made both the decocking lever and the slide stop lever, which I never use anyway, they've made both of those smaller and lower profile.
Yeah, see, that's pretty slick right there, and that's good thinking One of the most common malfunctions we see in guns is people's thumbs getting in the way of slide stop levers and either locking guns open prematurely, which is the less common of the two, or preventing guns from locking open when they're empty. And so making those, most people want to extend that lever, making that lever a lower profile or changing its position slightly so that your thumbs yep. don't interfere. That is a key. And one of my favorite modifications on my Glock, quote, 18, unquote, is the ghost forward slide stop lever. I think it's called the bullet, if I remember correctly. And it uh-huh. takes that slide stop lever and it pushes it forward a quarter of an inch and it gets it away from the fatty part of my thumb. And I no longer have problems keeping my gun from locking open.
Now, I've had problems with that happening, never on a Glock. I never put the extended slide release lever on it. I always keep the standard that's on there.
Yeah, and the standard should be good for most folks.
Right, and I never have a problem with M&Ps. I used to have a problem with SIGs, except I don't have that problem with the SIG Legion. And, you know, of course, like I said, I never use that stupid thing anyway.
Mm-hmm. Well, and here we're talking about a fit issue, right? You know, we mentioned yes. that we wanted to be yes. able to operate it properly, and part of yes. operating that slide stop lever properly is also making sure that you don't inadvertently operate it when you shouldn't.
Yeah,
and,
exactly.
And that's really a key. And so, you know, obviously the Glock pistol fits your hand well if your thumbs don't get in the way. And we can change thumb position. You know, we can change how we interact with the gun too. But if we can make an equipment change, you know, for $19.99, great. Let's make that equipment change so we don't have to worry about it.
Yeah, or a slight grip change.
Sure, absolutely. For free.
You know, yeah, for free. It doesn't cost anything. All right, so let's transition a little bit. I've heard you many times say that you carry your Glock 18, your cross between a Glock 17 and a Glock 19. Why does that work better for you in the appendix carry position?
Yeah, it's a good question. I would be as bold to say, Bob, that unless there's a limiting factor, I think appendix position is probably going to work better for most people as long as they're ready for the seriousness of carrying in the appendix position, if that makes sense. And the reason is simple, is human beings are wired to interact with violence and violent individuals, violent things, and the tools we use for violence in certain ways. And if you've ever been startled, you know, maybe you're outside taking out the trash and, you know, your neighbor inadvertently sneaks up behind you and, you know, you spin around, you probably are going to lower your center of gravity. You're going to turn your eyes, your shoulders, your hips and your feet to line up and square up to that potential threat. You know, your brain, the primitive part of your brain might think that that's a, you know, saber-toothed cat that's going to eat you, not your neighbor yeah. that just wants to borrow the post hole digger so he can fix the fence. And so when you square up and you turn, what you're doing is you're putting yourself in a position where your eyes can gather information about that threat, where your hands are probably going to move up towards that line of threat above the belt line so that you can block an attack. You could grasp the attacker. You could strike the attacker, or you could access tools that you might be carrying to be able to defend yourself. And with that idea in mind of gathering information and defense and attack in mind, you've put that threat in what I like to call your power zone. You know, if you imagine Muhammad Ali fighting, you know, Joe Frazier, Muhammad Ali is not going to stand with Joe Frazier 90 degrees to his right and try and throw punches, you know, straight out from his shoulder to his side.
True, it's true.
He doesn't have any power there.
No.
And humans can't fight efficiently that way. Sometimes I think the Browns, you know, offensive line here in Cleveland might line up that way, and that's why we lose. I don't really know. But it's just.
That's a good one.
Thanks. We've got to admit our flaws, right? We just don't fight that well that way. And so the appendix position puts our gun in a position where I can access it easily. In a position where I'm going to be strong. If I grasp my gun at an inopportune moment and the threat follows me in, which is what humans have been trained to do, when another human accesses tools to try and harm us, you know, our instinct says stop that action of accessing the tool. I'm in a position where I'm much more able to defend against them taking my weapon away than if my hand is behind my hip. If you imagine, you know, if you were right now to take your strong hand, whichever it is, your right or your left, and place it at the, say, 4:30 or 5 o'clock position, what you're doing is you're putting your hand in the beginning of that arm bar, right? So mm-hmm, it's a weak position. I can't even use my left hand to strike an individual that would be to my side or behind me holding on. So now if I access my gun and I've got more than one bad person, more than one threat to deal with, and one of them is behind me, now I've put myself into a compromised position where it's more difficult to access my firearm. It's also a longer distance from where I'm naturally going to put my hands to protect myself, that above the belt towards the line of sight directly in front of me. Now I've got a longer distance to go to reach the gun and then to bring the gun back onto target so that barrel is parallel with my line of sight and drive that gun to, whether it's extension or shoot from retention, whatever it might be. And so those two ideas right there are strong enough for me to say, we really need to think about the appendix position and if that's a good position for us to carry in, because it's much more defensible and the gun is much more accessible. And then we add in the third that's really the most important for me. It's incredibly concealable in that area.
Yes, it is.
I'm carrying basically a full-size pistol minus two rounds in the grip, and I can carry in a shirt that's, you know, stylishly one size too small, and I guess two sizes too small for a guy like me, and nobody ever knows that I've got that gun there.
Yeah, and you know, not only is it extremely concealable, but you've talked before about the weight distribution and why you actually like to have a longer barrel rather than a shorter barrel, right?
Yeah, the you know, what is it on a Glock 17, 4.5-inch barrel or something like that? You know,
yeah, but the slide is like about 7 inches.
Yeah, exactly. So that longer barrel and that longer slide, what it does is it takes the pressure of the belt and it distributes it over a wider area of the body.
Oh, okay.
And so that simply makes it more comfortable to carry. Maybe even more importantly, if we think about the weight balance of a gun, the majority of the mass in a pistol, especially one of the standard capacity pistols, whether it's 15 or 17 or 19 rounds, the majority of the mass is in the grip of the gun. The grip of the gun is above the belt line. And for some of us, you know, being pressed out a little bit by, you know, last Thanksgiving turkey dinner and pie.
Too many cheeseburgers.
Exactly. And so that longer barrel acts as a lever that helps to keep that grip, the mass of that grip, against the body so that it doesn't show as easily and even allow the gun to roll out. I see a lot of students that are carrying smaller guns like Smith & Wesson Shields, XDS series pistols, Glock 27s, where those barrels are so short, the gun has a tendency to want to rotate out away from the body and really prints significantly, even as a smaller gun, because it doesn't stay in.
You know, that's a very, very good point, because it happens to me all the time.
Right. So there's an easy solution. You don't have to replace your Glock 27 or Glock 29 or whatever, Glock 26, excuse me. All you need to do is put that into a Glock 17 holster.
That's right. Put it into a Glock 17 holster and run a few more laps.
Yep, absolutely.
And, you know, do those types. But putting it into a Glock 17 holster, okay, so what that does then is that basically acts like a Glock 17 length slide.
Yep, exactly. And that doesn't matter whether we're talking the appendix position or behind the hip. You know, either one of those carry positions, having the longer holster will help to keep that gun more stable. But the question I'm going to ask you then, and I want people to ask themselves really, is if you're going to put that extra holster length into your pants, why not put the extra slide length? Why not put the extra barrel length? Why not get all the advantages that come with that as well?
And no, because of the grip, though, the larger grip, though.
Well, and that's why I'm leaning towards the SIG P320, or I'm leaning towards the Timberwolf, or I've done what I've done by cutting off that grip, is I've made the gun into what it is that fits my carry style.
There's nothing wrong with that, though. As long as you have done it professionally or did it yourself professionally, there's nothing wrong with that.
Well, I guess what I don't like about it, Bob, is I take a, you know, let's call a $550 Glock, and I've turned it into a $350 Glock instantly. Whereas if I were just to shoot it for 1,000 rounds, well, now it's a $450 Glock. And no one that doesn't understand what it is that I'm doing would even consider buying a gun like that because they think it's just a novelty. There's a very specific reason why I do what I do. It's not a reason for everybody, but if people understood it more, maybe it would be something that's more sought after. And now we've got better solutions. You know, the chassis system on the P320, being able to take a Timberwolf frame and use a barrel extender, a dust cover extender clip. You know, you're able to take and put a Glock 19 length grip onto a Glock 17 or even a Glock 34. Great, do it. Have fun.
Now, if I'm not mistaken, there's also holsters that help with the appendix carry. A lot of good appendix carry holsters, but there's some that have like a wedge concept that helps that grip stay closer to your body as well.
Yeah, there's really two different things on an appendix holster that can really assist with concealment, and quality holsters are now exhibiting both of those things. The first might be some kind of either a foam wedge or some kind of a plastic or Kydex wedge that is near the muzzle of the gun. And if you would imagine on the side next to your skin, adding another half inch or 3/4 inch of material underneath the barrel, pushing the muzzle of the gun away from your body, that takes and tips the grip farther in. So now we've buried that grip into the belly a little bit more. In addition to that, if you were to take and add another half inch or 3/4 inch of material near the trigger guard and run the belt right over the top of that, when you cinch the belt down, that's now going to rotate the gun so that the magazine well end of the grip is tipped in. And so by tipping the gun in those two angles, we really increase concealment when it comes to an appendix holster. And so holsters like the Keeper's Concealment holster, holsters like the, I believe, Filster offers some options like that. The Dale Fricke holsters offer, you know, what Dale calls the butt tuck adapter and the extra girth adapter. And I think these things are valuable to you even if you don't have extra pounds, and maybe even more so if you're slim. Maybe you need to tip that gun in even more because there's not as much body to meld the gun into. The Raven Concealment Eidolon holster, however you say it, is a very modular holster that includes both of those attributes, and it's what I'm carrying in right now. And I'm really very, very pleased with that holster, and one of the worries I've got about the SIG P320 is I don't have as big of a holster selection. And so
yes,
I might have the configuration of gun that I want, but if that doesn't combine with the holster, well, now we've got a problem, don't we?
Yeah, you do. Paul, have you ever tried a Smith & Wesson M&P?
Yeah, I've got one. I've not carried it extensively because I don't have the holster for it, but that gun actually fits me significantly better than the Glock. But the issue I run into is I don't like the length of the 9C, the compact gun. My pinky hangs off that gun, and the full-size gun, it has the same basic length grip as the Glock 17, so I don't have that in-between ground, and I don't even have a magazine that I could use with that gun to
get
I think Glock has missed the boat with making their guns a little bit smaller for the majority of hands, and I think Smith & Wesson missed the boat. I mean, how many people say that the Glock 19 is the best concealed carry handgun ever conceived?
I'm one of those.
Right. Why not make a Smith & Wesson Shield that's right in that wheelhouse of concealed carry, home defense, duty? I mean, that size gun can very easily be the jack of all trades.
Well, the M&P 9C was supposed to have been that, I guess, but it's too thick.
Not only is it too thick, but the grip is short, and without
but the grip is short, yeah.
You know, you're right in between a Glock 26 and a Glock 19, and I really want that full length of the 19.
Yeah, you know, you're right. And this is one of the reasons why I love the G19 so much, because no, it's not perfect despite what their marketing says, but for me, and I've customized a couple of mine. They're about as close to being ideal as I can get.
Yeah. If there were a law against, you know, doing grip reductions and grip chops like I did on my gun, there's no doubt that I'd have a Glock 19 in my holster right now. It would be a non-issue. It'd be a full-length 17 holster. Throw a Glock 19 into it, and I wouldn't be worried about that at all. It's a great pistol, and I still recommend that as the most common. You know, I'm not sure what gun to get. Well, if this gun fits pretty well, you're going to be pretty happy with it. So go with that, and then you can learn from there. Maybe something works better, but start out here.
Yeah, going back to fit before, mm-hmm. what we were talking about, you know, sitting right here in front of me as we're speaking is a third-gen G19 that I had a guy here in San Antonio at Citadel Armory. He just did a very basic little grip job to mm-hmm. it. He undercut the trigger guard, and he got rid of the finger grooves and added just a small amount of texturing. And for my hand, this thing is just perfect.
Yeah, I think for
it's
most
perfect.
People,
and what's wrong with doing that?
Yeah, I think for most people, if those finger grooves are gone, that can really help for the gun to fit and feel better both. And the undercut on the trigger guard is one of the wonderful things that really helps a gun to be more recoil manageable, getting that grip up higher.
People don't realize the two simple things, if you don't like the way your Glock feels or fits, nicely take off the trigger grooves and, or the finger grooves, mm-hmm. excuse me, not trigger grooves, and have them slightly undercut the trigger guard where your middle finger rests,
yep.
and you'll be amazed. And somebody that knows what they're doing, that does it professionally, does it well, they can really make your handgun just perform a whole lot better for you.
Absolutely. And if you're a patient person and you're willing to spend a little bit of time, you know, you could do the same thing yourself. If you're decent at working with wood, or, you know, you've got some tools, I wouldn't necessarily say the belt sander is the way to go at it, you know, a little bit at a time, and see where you can get the shape of the grip so that you really enjoy it. Just be careful you don't take too much off. I've got one frame that was not professionally done. It wasn't done by me either, but the professional that did it didn't do it very professionally, and I can squeeze that grip and hold magazines inside and twist the whole frame. It's really kind of a disaster. So you've got to be careful.
Yeah. Paul, one last question mm-hmm. before I let you go. You do a lot of training. Mm-hmm. What have you seen lately has been kind of the popular thing, or what couple things have you seen that's kind of impressed you that maybe you didn't see before?
I'm thrilled with the number of people that are now coming to class and shaking their head or even looking at me in a confused manner when we talk about caliber. Everybody's seems to be pretty much on board with 9mm. That's a nice direction that we've headed. Bullet manufacturing has changed in the past decade and a half, in the past two decades, and now 9mm is probably the caliber to go with for dealing with human threats. And I'm glad to see that people are heading in that direction. The other thing that I think is my favorite thing, Bob, is the mm-hmm. number of female students that I have calling to set up courses for them and their husband.
Excellent.
And the number of women that are taking the initiative to protect themselves and their families and bringing their husbands along with them, that is an incredibly refreshing thing to see. The shooting sports are no longer the domain of the man, and they have been for so long. Not that women haven't been involved and haven't been pivotal in the development of different areas of the sport, but it's been dominated by men for many years. And I'm seeing a full one-third of my students now being female, which is very cool.
And a third, really?
Yeah,
wow.
Especially in the concealed carry end of things.
Wow, that's pretty good.
Yeah, we're hosting a Mag 40 course coming up, and there are three couples that are coming, you know, husband and wives that are coming together. And so that's great to see that those folks.
Very good to see.
Yeah, they'll be learning shooting skills, and more importantly, getting the legal understanding. And I think the third thing that I'll say, Bob, and I may not even be hitting this in any of the directions that you might want me to hit this, or the
you
listeners
are.
Might
you actually
want
are.
Here.
You are.
I'm thrilled at the people that are taking a holistic approach to safety. You know, we've been talking for the past 45 minutes or however long we've been chatting, which has been incredibly enjoyable, about guns.
Yes. Yes.
The fact is, that's only one little part of your safety. You know, there's five different areas, and we talked about this the last time I was on the show, the five different areas that we need to be looking at and training when it comes to self-defense. And there's so many more people that are open today to taking legal training, getting medical training and carrying medical gear and having medical skills, learning avoidance and awareness skills, understanding the unarmed combatives and how important those are, and realizing that, you know, you need some training beyond the concealed carry class.
Yeah, you do, and they're realizing that it's not just sitting for the 4 hours or 6 hours that they have to sit to get their concealed carry license.
Absolutely, and so that's incredibly refreshing to see. I am hopeful that someday we'll live in a country where those 27 words are interpreted as they should be, and you know, shall not be infringed is something that is important to everyone or important to most people. And shall not infringed is actually a reality. But right now, we have to have concealed carry permits in many states. And what I'm thrilled about is we're developing a culture in the firearms industry where proper training is the expectation of our community, not the expectation or the requirement of the state. And nowadays, what I'm seeing is people are expecting their peers to get quality training that goes far beyond what the state mandates. And I think that is one of the key aspects to regaining the freedoms that are guaranteed to us by our Creator.
I agree, and I've probably said it over 100 times throughout all the episodes that I've done. One of the biggest arguments that anti-gun people use against us is that we're a bunch of knuckleheads that have no training.
It's not true.
I know it's not true, but that's one of their main arguments. Yep. Oh, you guys are a bunch of vigilantes. You don't have any training. You don't know what you're doing with those things, with those guns. And we're basically taking that argument away from them.
That's what we need to do. You know, it's our right to keep and bear arms. It's that right that was given to us by our Creator and is guaranteed to us by our Constitution. And unfortunately, hasn't been taken seriously by the government for quite some time. And I think the biggest way to help people understand that it should be that right is to be responsible with our firearms. And it makes it such an easier argument when we store firearms appropriately, when we use them appropriately. It's common sense stuff. It's not hard to do. And that's what we should be doing.
Yeah, that's great. I'm glad that you added that in there. Well, before we sign off, Paul, tell people how they can find out about you, about the classes you got, anything else that you're working on.
Well, I tell you the thing I'd be most excited about is if people headed to safetysolutionsacademy.com/iTunes and checked out the podcast. I took about a year and a half off of the podcast and started to miss it, and you know, started to work with the Gun Nation, and that was really getting my podcasting fire going again. And I've really been going at it hard. And starting next Monday, we've got some new episodes. We'll have another interview coming out of the NRA annual meetings with Scott Folk of Apex Tactical Specialties. And so we'll be talking more trigger talk, you know, with the Smith & Wesson M&P series specifically, and some other products and really the history of the company. And they've got a cool announcement that they've been working on that he reveals in the show. So, you know, I think that would be cool to have people check out the podcast. So again, that's safetysolutionsacademy.com/iTunes. And, the other thing you do is, you know, safetysolutionsacademy.com is the website, and our critical defensive handgun class is coming up in, well, I shouldn't say it's coming up. I've got something on my mind here because I know that you were invited to, but unfortunately unable to attend a class that's coming up in the end of June. So that's
end of this month. Yeah. Thank you for the invitation. I appreciate it.
I'd love to have you when you can come, and I understand, or at least comprehend the challenges that you've got in your life right now. And I commend you for making the decisions you're making, because I believe that they're the right ones. And so that's awesome.
Well, thank you. I appreciate it.
That critical defensive handgun class is our flagship course. And we've got courses that are coming up throughout the month of June and scheduled through September. And so I'd love to have folks check that out. And if they're interested in taking that defensive handgun training to the next level, it's a great way to do it.
Is Mag 40 sold out?
Mag 40 is not quite sold out. We've got a couple of spots left. That is coming up June 16, 17, 18, and 19. So darn real close quick to when this releases. And if folks are interested, head to safetysolutionsacademy.com/mag and check out the course and get yourself signed up and come on out. We'll be spending 4 days, two on the range, two in the classroom, learning really important critical skills, especially the legal stuff.
It's never too late.
That's the truth, buddy.
Well, good. Paul Carlson, thanks for coming on again. I appreciate it. This was terrific. I'll be inviting you back again.
Well, Bob, and soon we need to have you over on the SSA podcast, and we will talk about things that people have never heard about Bob Main before.
Well, I've been talking so much for 6.5 years. I'm gonna have to scratch my head and try to figure out what is it I haven't said yet.
It's not gonna be hard. I've already got the questions. I mean, like simple stuff, Bob. You know, you work in sales for a living, and I want to know more about how it is you deal with the potential of facing customers that might have a gun bias and caring and protecting yourself. And you've got a podcast where, you know, I mean, it's pretty easy to connect those things together. How do you balance that out in your life? And so we'll talk about that and a ton more when you come on.
Yeah, okay, those are some pretty good questions. Give me about a week to think of some of the answers for those.
I'll give you a minute or two, but I don't know about it.
Okay, no. Actually, I love impromptu, so actually don't tell me what you're going to ask me, and I'll just I actually like doing that. That's more fun.
It's great to get just that gut reaction and to get out of what it is we normally talk about. You know, I mean, the questions you asked me tonight had me thinking about some things in a little bit different way than I've thought about them before. That's always good. It's good to stretch our mind.
There are some things that I'll share with your listeners as well. You know, you brought it up in this episode that it's important to know things other than just the gun.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, as a younger man, I had some critical training in some non-gun subjects that a lot of people might actually find quite interesting. I'll share them with you at the appropriate time.
Awesome. That sounds great, Bob. Thanks so much for having me. It's always a pleasure, and I look forward to talking to you again, Bob.
Anytime. Thanks, Paul. Good stuff. Thank you very much, Paul Carlson. I appreciate you coming on the show again. Don't forget to listen to his podcast, Safety Solutions Academy podcast. You can go to safetysolutionsacademy.com. You can also find it on iTunes. And Paul has also put together a PDF document, basically summarizing what we just talked about. So go to safetysolutionsacademy.com/handgunworld. It's called Handgun Fit, and it's a pretty good PDF document. It's actually part of the book that he's writing, so I think you're going to like that. Check it out. Again, go to safetysolutionsacademy.com/handgunworld and check out that document. Pretty good stuff. Please remember my sponsor, ConcealmentSolutions.com. ConcealmentSolutions.com, makers of some fine, fine holsters. The outside the waistband Cobra All Kydex holster, in my opinion, if you're going to carry outside the waist and you still want it to be concealable, very concealable, this thing holds the gun almost as close to your body as an inside-the-waistband holster. Jason, really, he does it very well. He really figured it out, and it's great. Makes everything really comfortable to carry. Makes it a piece of cake and a breeze to just carry just about anything. It's really easy for me to carry my Glock 19 in it, and very few people ever know that I'm carrying that Glock 19 in the Cobra holster, at least they don't say anything, but it's probably because they don't know, because I conceal it well and the holster does a great job. Handgun World is the coupon code that'll get you 10% off at Concealment Solutions on everything except the belts. Handgun World, put that in the coupon code, put that in as your coupon code, excuse me, and you will get 10% off of the fine holsters that Jason makes. Please remember my Amazon store. If you're going to be shopping on Amazon and you want to help out the Handgun World podcast and give me some support financially, just buy through Amazon, but just go through my link, my affiliate link. Just go to the Amazon store at handgunworld.com and follow that link first whenever you make your Amazon purchases. And then they will help me, or you'll help me, because Amazon will pay me based on whatever you end up buying on that visit. And I appreciate that very much. And Ben and I are working on some new videos for the Shooters Club. Hey, Shooters Club members, I got to tell you, we're going to be changing the password by the end of this month. So be watching your email boxes. Right now, the old password is still active. So if you need to watch some of those very, very informative learning videos that Ben Branham and I have produced, they're at the Shooters Club, shootersclubmembers.com. If you're not signed up, you can sign up for $8 a month. Only $8 a month. Think about that, folks. You can afford $8 a month, can't you? Or $75 a year if you want to save some money on an annual membership. The password will change at the end of this month, at the end of June 2016. How about an iTunes review? If you use iTunes, can you go over there and leave me a review for this show? I would love it, and other people who are checking out the Handgun World podcast would like to see your review. Thank you very much, folks. Hey, by the way, there's still a couple of spots left in Alaska at the end of this month if you want to join Ben Branham teaching Beyond Concealed Carry Enhanced 2-day class. A couple seats left. You can register at handgunworld.com. I'm Bob Main. I carry a gun because I can't carry a cop. Remember, the loudest sound that a shooter hears is a bang when he's expecting a click, or a click when he's expecting a bang. Shoot straight. Shoot safe. I'll talk to you next week. Goodbye.